This is The Platform Rules, Digital Transformation for Product Companies, hosted by Propel.
Daria was joined by members of the Propel team of Platform Rules First to discuss what makes a successful partnership between SaaS providers and SaaS buyers. Experienced customer success managers Aaron Graziani and Aaron Cloud, AC, share what they've seen from successful implementations, why enthusiasm and communication are key, how executive buy-in makes all the difference, and more in rule number 9, get set for success.
Aaron, AC, welcome to the Platform Rules.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
All right. I'm excited because you two are our very first Propeller heads on the podcast. So this is going to be a little bit different. But really, we've got you here for a very special reason. You've both seen just a lot of implementations, some successful, some not, some in the middle. So today we want to talk about what you've seen from our side of the business. And by that, I mean the SaaS provider side of the business for what makes a successful partnership and implementation. And keep in mind that most of the people on the audience are on the other side. They're the SaaS buyers. So we're looking to bring them some insights into what you all have seen that is going to make them successful. So I'm going to start right off the bat with a question. Hopefully it's not a tough question. But can you tell right away if a partner or a new customer is going to be successful? Don't everybody jump at once. All right. AC, you kind of jumped in there. So we'll move to you. We'll let you take that one first.
Yeah. I would say hopefully not, because that if it looks like it's not going to be successful right from the get-go, there's probably some misalignment on what it is they think that they're buying. You can't tell right away. Hopefully not. I don't know. Maybe Aaron, you have a different experience.
No, I was going to say not always. I think sometimes you get a really good feeling when a customer is really enthusiastic about what they just bought and, you know, they're really excited to get going. And sometimes you don't always get the same, you know, experience back, which is understandable. It's probably overwhelming for people buying new software to kind of just dive right in and learn this brand new tool that maybe they haven't had anything before. Maybe they had something completely different and they're changing things. They're worried about what their end user are going to think. So it's a mixed bag on the attitude we get when somebody first buys the software. But I think in the first few weeks, you can really get a good sense of them kind of understanding what they bought, and you can see the wheels turning for them and getting excited. But I think for the most part, within a few weeks, you can tell that things are going well and that you're on a good schedule. And most of the time that's the case. And if not, it's just a matter of kind of realigning expectations.
And there's a certain excitement to build on what Aaron is talking about. There's certain excitement, especially when you're replacing a manual process or something where it's not hard to see that there will be efficiency gains in implementing this new piece of software. And so there's like Christmas morning sort of feel for all of the potential, efficiency gains mainly, and just like, oh, we're not going to have to do these old processes that aren't any fun and very manual.
Yeah, I think a good example of one that was really excited, especially as we got really close to the time when they went live, a company Aaron and I worked for before, they actually had a VPN system and they threw it a going away party as they were ending that, so they decommissioned it. So they actually like took pictures of the going away party for their VPN. So that was always a funny one to hear, but it is very cool that the customer finally, you know, realized we don't need this anymore. We moved on to something bigger and better.
Okay. So, I mean, outside of AC comparing buying enterprise software to Christmas morning, I really like that answer. There's enthusiasm. If you see that, you know that, you know, the buyer has probably communicated internally to, you know, their employees what they're going to get. They're ready. They're excited. Anything outside of enthusiasm that you see? And I understand maybe this is not on day one because there's a lot of overwhelming issues. You know, it's a big project. But within those first couple of weeks, is there any other sign that you can normally point to that you know that this means that it's going to be successful?
I think also having someone, you know, at a higher level on that business, usually someone like a project manager or the manager head of a department is involved pretty heavily in whatever, you know, system you're purchasing, whatever software tool you're using. But having that buy-in from even higher up and having that support means a lot as well, not just for us, but for the customer as well, kind of knowing that they're getting backed up by making this, you know, crucial decision as well. So I think just having that kind of buy-in at the executive level or the C-suite level is important because it kind of just, it gives a good understanding that they're really invested, just as much so as we're invested in making them successful.
And the process of putting in the software is going to include so many different things. You're going to reevaluate your processes. You're going to ask people to make emotional investments. And the higher you have buy-in, you know, hopefully executive buy-in on the project, the easier it will be to handle those hurdles as they come up from a human perspective. I'm just like, oh, you're changing my job. Well, if the CEO says, hey, we're doing this because we're going in this direction, it's a little easier to get everybody on board and excited about some things that, I mean, people like their processes. They're like, hey, that's my stuff. Why are you messing with it? So I to reiterate what Aaron said, that I think is a huge telltale sign that things are going to be successful because they have executive buy-in. This matters enough for an executive to weigh in on, I think is a good sign.
So you mentioned the executive buy-in and the project manager, but AC, you talked a little bit about process. I want to dig into that a little bit. Do you see a difference in success with, say, companies that come in and say, this is what we're trying to do, can you all help us do it, versus companies that come in and say, we already know what we want to do and you need to help us do it? Like, is there any correlation on that in terms of success or, you know, the ability to get out? I just don't know. We hear about process a lot and we hear about the solutions needing to support a process. So I just don't know how you look at that trade-off from a success standpoint.
Yeah, I think even to maybe take your question a little deeper and say, you know, is there a difference between the customer who comes to us and says, this is my problem, how can you help us solve it? Yeah. And we've done all of the hard work of documenting some of the core processes that this software would touch, compared to the other customer who comes to us and says, hey, we got this problem and we think you can solve it. They purchase it, and then now we need to identify what are all the processes that this could possibly touch. And then inevitably, when a company starts peeling back the onions of their processes, they're like, oh, we really do it that way? Hey, this could be our opportunity to do it a different way. And which is true. That's all. I've been a part of implementations where I was actually implementing the software, and that actually happened. And that's when you get into that dangerous area of scope creep. And it's like, hey, we bought this to solve this one problem. Now we're talking about, you know, this whole other problem. And sometimes that's good. And it's an opportunity to look at your processes. But I think to answer your question, the customer that comes with a good understanding of what processes they want to change, how they would like to change them, and how your software can help facilitate that, is going to have more success more immediately than the one that is looking to, you know, do that hard work kind of along the way, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely more time consuming. And like Aaron mentioned, you know, if you had a statement of work and we're expecting it to take, let's say, 40 hours to set up a process, if you're building those processes or kind of getting sidetracked along the way, it's really easy to consume that 40 hours. So having at least some kind of idea of here's what we think, or here's kind of the baselines at least of the points we want to hit along the way of that process can definitely help stay, you know, clear of going over on any of those hours. But at the same time, you know, our professional services team is great and they know what they're talking about. So if there's somebody that really truly has no idea, or this is the first time they're really kind of talking about building formal processes, we work with some startup companies that just don't have a lot of that yet. That is also totally normal. We've seen both sides of the spectrum where some companies know exactly what they want. They're coming from a different software that they already had those procedures set up in before. They just want to copy them over, and other ones have no idea what they want to do. And that's okay too.
So it seems like as long as that is known and communicated up front, there's a way to make it successful. It sounds like the scope creep comes more when you start going down one path and then change course mid-path. Is that fair?
Well, yeah. And you identify things. You're like, oh, this is an opportunity. And that's natural. I think that the way to keep it on track is to have those goals, like these business drivers for why we're buying it. And so whenever one of these opportunities comes up to rethink the process, you say, okay, yeah, that's definitely interesting and possibly even more efficient, or we could save money. It doesn't align with our business processes for this phase, but let's definitely add that to a phase two, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah, Aaron, that's a good point, because I think a lot of customers kind of come into it with the expectation or the hope that we can do, you know, one professional services engagement and get everything set up. And sometimes that's realistic for a really small company or someone that has a use case that's pretty straightforward. But a lot of the customers, Propel specifically, that we work with, they kind of align things. And again, our professional services team does a great job of setting those expectations pretty early on. But it does often make sense to kind of phase things out like that. So you have a phase one where you focus on one particular area. Maybe it's just the PLM side, or maybe it's just case to complaint on the quality side. So you kind of get your feet wet with Propel. You get in there, you understand, you train your users. And then from there, you can kind of make those expansion plans. But it is really easy to see all the potential when you're first going through that implementation. And it's hard not to stray and say, oh, this would be so fun, or this would be so cool to implement, or our users really need that. Maybe we should just add it. But there's plenty of time. And we do kind of address things, we scope things the way that we do, because it logistically it makes sense. But it is really easy to get sidetracked by seeing all these opportunities where there's, you know, other users you could help, other departments that would have interest. So it's definitely hard to stay on track sometimes.
Well, and I think that's one of the great things outside of Propel, SaaS in general, the whole, you can start small, expand. If you're ready to go big off the bat, going back to, you've got that scope, you know what you want, that's great. But if you're not sure, you can start small. I mean, that's what a lot of SaaS, it's just great that it opens up that possibility there. So you see it in action. Sounds like you're confirming that one. It's not just the marketers who say it, it's the people who live it, who feel it. Yeah. Okay, so let's switch gears, and I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but you've got your best practices, but I think you've also seen some, you know, implementations that go sideways or even worse. So what are some of the negative things that you see that, you know, let's call them pitfalls? What are the pitfalls that you should avoid outside of changing course, you know, mid implementation? What would you recommend people avoid doing here?
I think the biggest thing is just lack of communication. So if we don't hear from you for a while, or you don't hear from us, you know, that's the last thing we want, is to have that breakdown in communication. But if one side or the other in this partnership doesn't know where things are at, or they're frustrated, those are important things to surface, because they can lead to, you know, delays in getting you live, which of course we don't want. But it can also lead to just frustration in that partnership relationship later down the road. And I think Propel, again, specifically, like one of our core pillars is customer delight. So we always want to make sure that, you know, we're providing the best possible service that we can for you, no matter which phase you're in. If you've been a customer for 6 years, if you're just buying it now, or if you're a prospect. But definitely the communication is key, and it builds trust along the way. So we want to be able to trust that, you know you're in good hands, and we want you to be able to trust that we're going to set you up for success. And, we really do have your best interests at heart to make sure that we set you up so that you can succeed. And then I think the other part of it is also just knowing where the implementation stands. So we want to be honest with you and say, hey, you know, we really had a tough timeline here. We want to go live in 6 weeks. And to do that, we really need full commitment from you. So other expectation setting is important too. Sometimes it's just not realistic, the timelines that we think of. But we do try to do our best to kind of meet all of those ahead of time, but communication is what it always falls back on.
Yeah. And that's not just communication with between the partnership, our partnership, but also with their internal stakeholders and eventually end users. Has there been the communication in that way too? Because adoption is going to be pretty important for, you know, realizing any return on investment.
Okay, great. So keep the lines of communication open, collaboration. The more open you are, again, both internally as well as with a partner like Propel, the better you're going to get the more value you're going to get out of that implementation, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So related question then, as you think about a customer's life cycle with the SaaS product, going from the implementation, the initial phases of an early launch, you know, then maybe more of an established, it's been, you know, deployed 2 or 3 years, is that communication still key, or does the success factor evolve over time as you go through this life cycle as just as a SaaS user?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the communication across the partnership and you know, at Propel, it's going to be through your customer success manager like Aaron or I. That's critical for a lot of different reasons. One of them is that one of the benefits of software as a service is that it is evolving. There will be things that are new functionality, maybe even a different user experience. And so having a good line of communication with the person who's been tasked with helping you to, you know, take that in, think about ways to use the new functionality, is how you see, and this would probably be that third life cycle phase you're talking about with the customer. But I think that's a really critical piece, because, you know, that's what, in our case, the CSMs, that's our job. We want to make sure that you are finding success with every part of your life cycle with the software. And one of the benefits is, as you have already mentioned, is that you come into a SaaS product as it's just a small use case. But as you find success in that use case, you're looking for other ways to leverage that technology for other areas of your business, of your process, that communication, keeping that communication going with the partner. And if you think of it as a partnership, they can help you to find the ways that you can do that. And that's the exciting part of our job is really working sort of as a consultant in our area of expertise, which is our software.
Okay.
Yeah. I think in addition to that, each stage of that life cycle, what you think of as success changes, right? So when you're implementing, success probably means you meet your go live target date, you know, you get all of the the setup configuration that you wanted to have done in that period of time. And then it really shifts to adoption from there, because you want your end users to get used to this new software that you're using. You want them to actually, you know, enjoy that product. You don't really want to see all these support tickets coming in for this brand new software that you just purchased. So I think right after that go live period is pretty critical in terms of, you know, the success overall long term of what you'll see with the software product, just because end users are actually in there touching it every day. And then the further out you get from there, I think the longer term is what Aaron's talking about, you know, finding ways to expand that initial use case, or after you've done all of these phases, finding the best way to get a return on your investment. So how can you get more out of whatever software that you're talking about?
Now, it's interesting. You both talked about expanding and you've talked about communication. One of the things that I've seen from some of the larger prospects that come in is sometimes they have Propel already and somebody from a different division or a different company is reaching out and they're asking our sales team if they can help them with another issue, another use case, another problem that they're trying to solve. Would these companies be better served going through their customer success manager, like you, going through somebody who's already got the relationship, as opposed to coming in bound for a whole new sales process? I mean, ultimately, we bring them together. We do inform them that there's an admin. So maybe, you know, as I just think out loud here, the question is more, why do you think the other division is coming in to Propel sales channel as opposed to talking to their own internal people first? Is it because they don't know? Is it that they don't think of it?
I think it's that they don't know. And I mean, I think we could think of you and I could probably think of it, an example where there are tools you use that I don't know that we have. And it's kind of a similar situation. And we do the same thing on the other side. We're saying, you know, where else can we help you to find value? And sometimes the person that we're talking to, the point of contact that we have, knows exactly ways that we could help maybe the quality team with the QMS system tied into our PLM. They know exactly how we could solve that problem. Sometimes they don't, because they're like, yeah, it works for what we want it to do. And I don't know anybody else at the company that could use this. And so in that case, they might come to, you know, it might be the situation where we get connected to our marketing team. But I don't think that that's an uncommon situation.
Yeah, I actually right now I have a prospect that's, fingers crossed, about to sign with us very soon. But they are kind of a sub company under one parent company that already has two other companies that are Propel customers currently. And it's not that they don't know, they're very aware that these other two customers exist, and they actually have a shared like managed IT team. So the IT team already knows a lot about Propel, they already manage it. But they wanted to invite in the specific stakeholders at that, you know, specific separate company to really get invested. So like we were talking about earlier, getting investment or, you know, some backing from that higher level is really important. So they wanted to go through that sales motion again, even though they know it's probably the right fit. They wanted to go through that motion to make sure that they have the buy-in from the right level in their company. And in terms of what we do on the back end, like if this customer signs, then myself and the salesperson would be the same. So it is nice for consistency's sake behind the scenes to have all three of them managed under the same person or same people. So we do make that nice and easy afterward. But there are times like that where even though they're aware, they might want to kind of go through that formal cycle to get all of that information or the demos that they need, et cetera.
Okay. So earlier you mentioned exec sponsor and you brought it up again now, but we also introduced the IT aspect here. Do you normally need IT in the mix to be successful as well? Or do you need more of that end user in the mix or both or neither?
It really depends on the size of the company. That's a hard one. Sometimes, you know, with these small startups, there's people wearing a lot of hats. So there's probably a head of a department that's the one, you know, purchasing Propel, and they're probably the one managing it, or someone on their team is managing it. When you get up into these larger enterprise sized companies or even mid-market, sometimes, you know, they have an IT team established. They've got a Salesforce admin that is usually a big part of that conversation, because Propel sits in Salesforce, and I would imagine a lot of other software companies are the same. But it really depends on the size of the company and where they're at in their own kind of, you know, their own company journey. I'd say most of the time, by the time they're at least a few years in, there is somebody from IT that at least is involved at a light level. I've seen it of various ways, but for the most part, there's almost always somebody with a more technical role like that that understands Salesforce, or they have more of an IT background where they can kind of help support any of those technical questions.
Okay. Yeah. And I would just say one of the benefits of being on the Salesforce platform is being able to connect to other things on the Salesforce platform, which is going to require, you know, the Salesforce admin, which is probably in IT. So
yeah,
I'll just add that.
Okay. So let's switch gears here to another issue I know has come up in the past. And I think, again, this is very typical of SaaS or any type of partnership for that matter. You've got that executive sponsor, you've got the person who's the champion, everything is going great. And then the person takes a job in Europe or leaves the company or gets promoted and moves to a whole different role, and you no longer have that connection. And all of a sudden, you know, a key person who is responsible for the success of the partnership is gone. How do you deal with that from your end? And then what advice would you give to companies that you're working with, how they should make sure to avoid any problems here?
You want to go first?
Again, I see smiles. I don't know if that means that the question was difficult or, but.
Well, I think it's, it's inevitable and it happens a lot. In the best case scenario, your software is so embedded in their everyday processes that it's like, okay, yeah, this isn't the person who purchased it, but man, we can't live without Propel. In which case the transition is pretty easy. Sometimes I have seen it at other places I've worked where it wasn't as much of an enterprise-wide function where the champion left, which is a good opportunity for us to maybe take our software to another company, but it's how do we keep it going at the place where he, in this case, he was our champion. He loved it. And that is, that it sometimes is a coordinated effort. You know, they give you 2 weeks. Hopefully they give their software vendors 2 weeks too. In this case, they did. And we spent those 2 weeks having meetings that were attended by our champion and the person that came behind them, to basically resell the software. So having executive buy-in for the software is a critical piece of this, especially if they see it as integral to their business. And then it's like, okay, yeah, maybe the next person isn't, you know, familiar with it, but the executive says, hey, we're using this. So I think that's one way that you could approach it from that perspective. And then, you know, from our perspective, obviously, we are looking for any super user, anybody who's going to be our new champion inside the company.
Yeah, I think my biggest piece of advice would be document why you configured things the way that you did. Yeah, because the biggest thing that I've run into is, you know, even if there was a whole implementation team that has since left at various times, this new team that has come in over time, not all of them start at the same time. They're kind of coming in and filling various roles in managing Propel. You know, maybe somebody is just in charge of doc management. Somebody's like the overall Salesforce admin, somebody else from IT. They have these different pieces of Propel that they might've understood, but there's not kind of an overarching document that says, you know, here's why we set things up this way. That's where the biggest holes are that I found is, you know, this new team that's taken over has no idea why someone 3 years ago decided this was the way that our, you know, specific life cycle was set up. And if they want to make a change to that now, it's an effort to make that change, especially if it's somebody that has a validated environment, it's a big change. And so just having some kind of reasoning or, you know, documentation as you're going through implementation and saying, this is why we chose that could be very helpful down the road. And then I think, like Aaron mentioned, you know, having that executive sponsorship is something that can hopefully kind of keep some of that consistency. Or if there are multiple people involved that you meet with on a regular basis, you know, I know we try to tend to have more than one point of contact. So in the case that this does happen, or when it happens that somebody leaves, we can still kind of keep the continuity of the larger picture. There's always somebody that kind of knows what that next 6 to 12 months looks like. There's somebody that can kind of keep that in mind, and then we can always train that new person as they come in.
Okay, so from our perspective, I get the answers. I'm trying to think of it from the customer perspective, the buyer perspective. If the champion again has left, I appreciate your point, AC, just in terms of you want to make sure that it's mission critical. So let's say that it is mission critical, but now your head person has left. I mean, you don't want to be a headless horseman. Or, I mean, as best on what you're saying, Aaron, if everything is documented, it doesn't really matter if there's a champion in place. I'm trying to understand if I'm a buyer on the other side and I'm faced with this. One, how do I set myself up for success before it happens? And it seems like the documentation is the way to go. But then once it happens, what are the steps that you would recommend I take in order to make the transition as smooth as possible? And to just put it a different way, I don't want people to use it because they have to. Like, somebody who has to use software and hates it is very different than somebody who has to use software and loves it. And, you know, from our perspective, we want to be in that latter category. So what do you recommend companies do when they lose that champion?
Yeah, I think coordinate with your customer success manager, if you have one, or, you know, whoever, whatever resource you have. You know, they might call that a different title at other software companies, but odds are you'll have either some kind of support ticket system that you can ask, like, hey, I'm brand new, no one left anything for me, can you help me? Can you give me an overview? We're especially here, like, we're always happy to do that. We offer training as well. So depending on if it's a new team of people, a new group of users, just a new admin, we've got different, you know, training sessions where that kind of goes over that in various amounts of depth, depending on what you need to know and when you need to know it. So I think definitely that's a great place to start, is just knowing that you definitely have help somewhere. And then if you do have, you know, an actual person, a customer success manager that you can reach out to at your company, even if they're not the right person to train you on all those things, they can definitely help, you know, set you up with all the resources you might need. So a link to the help desk or the knowledge base site is always huge. Any kind of video overviews that you might have, just the basics so that they can start taking that in. And then, you know, over time, Propel takes time, just like any other software system takes time to learn. So like, we don't want to overwhelm you with this, you know, hour-long demo right away on your first day or your second week or whatever, but we're here to help. So, you know, depending on how fast you want to absorb that information, or if you just want a little dose of it every once in a while, like, we're here to make that happen however it makes the most sense.
Okay, great. So let's end up with a couple of hypotheticals. So put yourself in the place of a software buyer. So at this point, it's going to be the decision maker, the person who's signing the checks, the person who wants to make sure that the money they're spending is going to be ROI positive. What advice do you give them to make sure that they are spending money wisely, that it's an investment, that it's going to drive ROI? What are the steps that you would recommend they take here to do that?
I think the first step is to determine what success is. And that may be a quantitative measurement, or it may just be more of a qualitative measurement. But whatever that is, early in the project, even before maybe you start implementation, determine how you're going to measure success and the return on investment, which, you know, in some cases that efficiency could just be the return on investment. And how are we going to measure the efficiency gains? It's a little easier to measure success if you know what you're measuring for success. And I know that sounds very simple, but I mean, it really is simple and not always done. And so I think that that's a key step for any software buyer. I have been in that situation. And it was just kind of, well, you want the new tool. We want the new tool that everyone else has. Well, that's kind of hard to measure. Because once you have it, you have it. But is it really helping? Are we doing what we wanted to do? It would have been better in my case when that happened to have had that goal to go back to. So I think that's one step or a piece of advice I would give.
Yeah, that was exactly what came to mind for me too, is just knowing exactly what you're looking for and what success looks like. I think, you know, if you're talking to multiple companies, which is a pretty normal part of that process, if there is a vendor that's not asking you, you know, what is important to you, it's probably not worth venturing down that road, because ultimately that's what's the most important, or what should be the most important, is making sure that we could, like, we as the software provider, the software service, can actually give you what you want to see. And like Aaron mentioned, there are some results that we can probably measure or give you a report on. Other ones are probably more of an internal thing where it's something that you will know you have success at. Efficiency is sometimes easy to measure, sometimes not. It depends on what it is. But they're having those in mind, even when you're just doing the first kind of evaluation stage, is really important, just so you can know if it's even possible for some of those vendors to meet what you're looking for.
Yeah. Okay, great. What were you about to say more, AC? No?
Nope.
All right. All right. So then let's take it down to a different success metric, which comes down to, you know, your users, your admins. What advice are you giving to the people who are actually then using this on the other end to make sure that they're happy and successful? What would you do if you were in that position on the other side here? Aaron, do you want to start?
Yeah, say, I think if you will definitely hear from your end users if they do not like it, for sure you will hear about it. And I think part of that is just prepping them, you know, very early. So once you've selected a vendor and you know that change is coming, especially in Propel, you know pretty well ahead of time when that go live is going to be, so you can, you know, kind of ease into that transition for your end users. You can plan training sessions ahead of time. And sometimes some software solutions are really quick, so you don't have as much of a warning for people. But I think that's a big part of how people perceive it, is how they get trained on it and how different it feels. People are not a big fan of change, but that doesn't mean that they can't like it once they try it. So I think just preparing your users is a huge step for that.
The communication, back to the communication internally and utilizing any of your change controls that you've got. Another benefit of going through IT often, not always, but often, is that you get, you know, that they're used to implementing new software and making sure that end users are ready, potentially excited about it. And sometimes, you know, we as software providers get into the best case scenario where whatever we're replacing was so bad that you can only go up, in which case they're going to be excited. But I think, you know, that I've been an end user that's lost software that I thought was really very important to my job. There's an emotional attachment to that. And it maybe there's this 12 stages of software grief, but you kind of got to work through that and then be excited about the potential, because you know, it's the earlier you can get in on the project, I mean, be part of one of those focus groups that they of end users that they look at to see what they want. You know, you can help to make the software better. Just kind of by having a good attitude, I guess. It's back to that human part of software.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. It always comes back down to the human part of software, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
communication, sponsors, openness. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Excellent. All right. We've come to the end of our session. Aaron, AC, thank you for everything that you do to make our customers successful. And thank you for coming on today and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Platform Rules Digital Transformation for Product Companies. You can listen to this show and more at propelplm.com/podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share with a colleague, leave a review, or email us at podcast@propelplm.com with any feedback or questions. Until next time, Platform Rules.